The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
Hello, party people. Welcome to Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy.
I'm Lynn Ozawi, and it's on the brink of my favorite time of year. It's March. It's madness. And Dope Village, we've got a super special guest, someone who rewrote the history books this past season in college hoops.
She sure did. How lucky are we to get capital L legend of the game, it's Stanford women's basketball coach, Tara T-Dog Vanderveer. Yes, Coach Vanderveer on the pod. And she is only the winningest basketball coach ever, male or female, in NCAA history. Tara passed former Duke men's coach, Coach K, in January of this year to earn that incredible distinction. And possibly even more impressive, Lynn, she honored our interview time and spoke with us the day after losing to USC in the Pac-12 championship. Bless her precious little soul for taking a moment in the middle of tourney time craziness to talk with us. Tara has been at the helm at Stanford since 1985 and has coached the Cardinal to 3 national championships. She is a 5-time National Coach of the Year, a member of the National Basketball Hall of Fame, and, as I mentioned, but worth repeating, the winningest coach in NCAA college basketball history. And at the time of this airing, she has, drumroll please, 1,214 wins in her career. Good God. In her more than 4 decades of coaching, we figured Coach has some stories. So we are calling this episode Storytime with T-Dog. Yeah, it turns out T-Dog's got some good ones. So get comfortable listening. It's Tara Vanderveer. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com.
Kick back. So bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling alright, get comfortable listening. It's Laughter Permitted.
What's up, Coach?
How are you?
Hi, darling. I know you're not wanting to do this right now because of last night, and I greatly appreciate you actually logging in. I was like, no!
You've had some bad games before, haven't you?
No, never.
Never? Okay, bad good.
Games. I know. But hey, you know what? You just got to do it in the big dance, baby. It's okay.
I mean, it's all good. You know, we did not play well last night, but to be where we are, we're already overachieving. So we're kind of playing with house money.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do.
Lynn and I did like your line you gave after the game last night.
Left the offense at the hotel?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know why I said that. It just kind of popped in my mind, you know? I'm like, damn.
Oh, I've been there. And you're like, what is going on?
I know.
I am so curious, Tara, Julie, if you encountered each other during Julie's days at Stanford.
Remind me what years you were here. What years were you here?
I was there in like 1800s, so okay, before
so
you,
I
maybe.
I was there in 1700.
1989 to 1993.
Yeah, those were good years.
Yeah.
We overlapped.
AZ, yeah.
You guys, we won 2 championships, 90 and 92. And how'd you guys do?
We did not win any championships, thank you. But we
did
all right.
Well. You won Pac-12.
We weren't, you know, we were like the beginning of the program when it first started. So when I got there, it was fairly new.
Yeah. So you overlapped with Jennifer Azee.
Yeah.
Anya Henning, Kate Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Great group.
Yeah. Yeah. A's and I still chat. You'll hear about that in a little bit.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Let's go.
First thing we always do, Tara, on the podcast is we set the scene, have our guests set the scene. So where you're at, what you're doing, all those fun things.
I'm at home right now. We have a day off. We played yesterday. We're waiting for the NCAA tournament bracket to come out next Sunday. So we take Monday and Tuesday off. It's a long weekend when you play 3 games in 4 days.
Yeah.
And then we'll practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and we get the selection show on Sunday. So right now we're a little bit of a holding pattern.
It's nice actually to have 2 days though.
It
How
is.
Often do you get 2 days back to back like that?
It's not very often, but our team really appreciates it.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, we decided we're going to change this up from just a regular interview with you today because you have, I mean, what, over 45 years, 45 years in coaching?
Yeah, I've read about that.
The stories you must have from 45 years. So we're calling this Story Time with Tara.
Okay.
I would like to call it Story Time with T-Dog,
All
if
right.
you would allow.
Sure.
So Lynn is going to start us off and then we're going to prompt you on some stuff.
Coach, can you tell us the story of how you were once a mascot?
Yes. I went to school at it's called Milne School. Our mascot was the bear. And I wanted to go watch the boys team play because when I was little, I was in the 7th grade. There were no teams for girls. And the boys had a 7th grade team, an 8th grade team, a 9th grade team, freshman team, JV team, and varsity team. And my dad was getting his PhD at SUNY Albany, and Milne was the campus school to SUNY Albany. So I would go early in the morning. I would like do my homework sometimes in the gym, and I would watch all these teams practice, and I wanted to watch their games. But we lived like 30 minutes away, so I knew that I wouldn't just be able to say, hey, let's go to the game. I'm the oldest of 5 children, so my parents were not going to be taking me to a game. So I said, I have to get a job at the game in order to say that they had to take me. So the only thing that was available was being a mascot. So I tried out for the mascot and I got it. But what I did was I took the bear head off and watched the game. And so I got fired after 2 weeks because I wasn't leading the cheers. So that's the only job I've been fired from, mascot job.
That's like rule number one is a mascot. Don't take the head off.
Right.
Never reveal your identity.
It was hot. It was, you know, and I was like, I just set the head down and I said, I'm going to watch the game. And so it didn't last very long.
Wait, so did your parents end up taking you when they saw how much you wanted to be there?
Probably not, you know, but.
No, you saw 2 weeks of the season.
I was about the game. So I've really watched a lot of practice. So and I really like practice in a way a lot, even more than the games.
When was that like first inkling of, oh my God, I love this game so much and I want to play it. I want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, when did you feel that first?
You know, I remember that I think I was like in the 5th grade and we did a 3-player weave in gym class and I loved it right then. The very first time I ever did basketball, you know, we would go out on the playground and we would play keep away. We'd, you know, you'd have one ball and everyone was chasing everybody around for hours, keep away, right. Kickball, baseball, softball, football, but basketball, I was crazy about. And if I didn't play basketball, I would have played hockey. I love hockey too.
Ah, interesting. That's cool.
But they didn't have any teams for girls in anything, you know, there weren't sports. It was, you know, pre-Title IX and it was really hard. It was really hard not to have that, you know, have that team, have that that community that we have now. And, you know, when I think of how different it is, it's just amazing how things right now are just so different in terms of, you know, the support for girls. When I tell the story at basketball camp about the fact that I didn't play, you know, when I was a little girl, never had basketball camp, never had a team in high school, no uniforms, no scholarships, no pro games. And I go on and on and on. And, you know, we have 58-year-olds in Little Kissick Auditorium and one little 8-year-old raises her hand and goes, well, why was it like that? You know? And I'm like, how do I explain this to 8-year-old girls? And so I said, well, can anyone else answer that question? Another little girl pops her hand up and goes, sexism, like that. You know? You know, sexism. It's just so, so different. Yeah. And she knew, you know, and then we talked about that with the 8-year-olds.
Oh, incredible.
Sexism. That's good. All right. Tell us the story of what you said to the team after you became the winningest basketball coach ever.
Men's or women's.
Yes.
You know, we had the game at Stanford, and one of our top players, Cameron Brink, was out. And I was just thinking, I don't know, we were playing a really good team. We were playing Oregon State. And I was thinking, you know, we might win, we might not. You know, this is going to be a really tough game. And I had, after the game, I had planned to play bridge with my mother and my bridge partner and my sister. And like at, I don't know, the game was at 1, we were going to play at 4 o'clock, which would, you know, ordinarily work. I said, well, maybe we better play at 4:30, because if we win and, you know, the record set, we'll have a little, you know, little thing afterwards. And so we had a great game. Kiki Iriofen had 36 points. She hit 2 threes. Place was packed. It went crazy. And it wasn't so much what I said to the team, because it was more like what other people said. You know, they got up. Jennifer Azu was there, Rosgold Onwuadeg, Chinay Ogumike, and people stayed and they did like a hour long program. And, you know, I met with the team and they gave me a really nice pendant, Stanford with the number 1203 on it, and a shoe box that had like, you know, kind of Nike decorative shoes. And I don't know if you saw my jacket, the tally jacket was really cool. And
it's very cool.
And, you know, the kids wanted to take pictures with the jacket, not me, but the jacket.
Like, out of the picture, coach, can we have that jacket on? Yeah.
But you know what I really said to them was, you know, I mean, I was, you know, really proud that of the team and how well we played. And I just said, you know, I was really glad to share this milestone with this particular team, because this team is an unselfish team and it really exhibits like kind of all the things that I think of are good about a basketball team. You know, that they're very unselfish. They work hard. They just give themselves the best chance of being successful.
Oh, I love that.
Coach, something people might not know, you have had an illustrious career at Stanford, but you took a little break in there back in 1995. And there's a direct correlation between that and the formation of the WNBA. And I'll give a brief context for our listeners, is you took a hiatus from Stanford to coach the USA basketball team as they headed into the 1996 Olympics, went on a global tour, and this team was stacked. Lisa Leslie, Cheryl Swoopes, Dawn Staley, Jennifer Azy. I'm not even naming all of the superstars. So can you tell us the story of what it was like when that buzzer went off in Atlanta in 1996 and you had won the gold medal?
Well, I think in order to get there, you got to kind of know what led up to it. You know, in 1992, the USA did not win a gold medal in Spain. It was in Barcelona. And then when 1996, the Olympics were in our country, USA basketball basically said, hey, we're going to put some resources and time into really training the team, because women's basketball didn't have the pros playing in the United States. They were playing all over the world, but we're going to pay, you know, money to our top women to train together and give ourselves the best chance of winning a gold medal. A lot of the other countries trained together, but we never had. And so I had to resign from Stanford, and my assistant coach, Amy Tucker, the associate head coach, took over and took the team to the Final Four, actually the year I was gone. And I was gone for the year traveling. And as you said, we barnstormed the United States, and we, you know, ended up going then to Atlanta. But I was introduced on April 13th, 1995, by C.M. Newton, this way at Stanford in the Kissick Auditorium. This is not about bronze. This is not about silver. This is about gold, Tara Vanderveer. So it was very clear what, you know, the expectation was. And, you know, you can't always control winning a gold medal. You can do everything right, and someone could, you know, have a sprained ankle or, as you know, all kinds of things, and it won't happen. But we did everything that we could. And in fact, there was someone almost hurt the whole time we're training, the whole year, more than a year, until the Olympics in July. But we trained and we went all over the world. And one thing I'll just say is that we had We had a great, great group of women. And we lost one of these women this past year. Nikki McCray passed away of cancer. And it's really sad to think that that team will never be together, you know, in person. But it was an amazing, amazing team. And during the time that we were training all year and barnstorming, I met actually with David Stern, who was the commissioner of the NBA. And he just said, you know, hey, the NBA was supporting this team with paying my salary and the coach's salary and the training and the travel. And he just said, you know, we're really looking at this to see, kind of evaluating it, how popular is women's basketball. And he said, you know, we're not sure how this is going to go. And we're just not sure one thing. I said, what's that? He said, well, we're not sure about you. And I said, don't worry about me. You know, we're going to take care of it. And we did end up, you know, winning a gold medal. And at the time they were looking at two leagues. It was the ABL and the WNBA. Yeah. And of the 12 women, 9 actually went to the ABL and 3 went to the WNBA. And that was that team and those players were the foundation players of the WNBA, some 1996, you know, almost 30 years ago.
So what about when that buzzer went off because of all that work?
The buzzer went off and it was like leading up to the Olympics in Colorado Springs. They have this big countdown where I remember, like, when I first looked at the number, it was like 472 days or something like that, you know, and then every day it gets down and gets down and gets down. And so you never really felt it was really ever going to happen. But, you know, August 4th, 1996, and we were the last event of the Olympics, and it was absolutely thrilling. We were playing in the Georgia Dome, and we had gone there with, we had done a mock gold medal ceremony in the Georgia Dome in October when we had played Georgia, and we had invited Teresa Edwards, lived there, and she had gold medals. So we did a ceremony to practice what we were going to do when we won. And it was absolutely thrilling. We played a great game. We played against Brazil, who had beaten us in the World Championships. It was a high scoring, very, very exciting game, up-tempo game. Lisa Leslie had a great game. Everyone played really well. And I think everyone played. So that was great too. And then afterwards, you know, the players go up on the medal stand. Coaches do not get medals. And they played the anthem. And it was just like, then you just go back to your life. And so I came back to California, and I was in the grocery store the next day after getting winning the gold medal. And this woman was kind of looking at me, you know, so I'm thinking, okay, yeah, she, you know, and she looks at me and she goes, are you Tara? You know, I go, that's close enough. Yeah. And she goes, I watched the game yesterday. And I said, oh, thanks. She goes, you're shorter than I thought. Not like congratulations, you know, nothing. But it was pretty funny. But I think there's a relief. You know, there was a tremendous amount of pressure on our basketball team and the women that I coached to win a gold medal. And we worked very hard. You know, as a player, sometimes you're just like, you know, damn, you know, this coach is crazy. You know, just we did a lot of running. We lifted weights. We traveled. We went all, we put on about 99 months, about 150,000 miles. We went to China, Lithuania, Italy. We played in Australia. I mean, all of these are separate trips and all over the country. So, you know, it was really in a very intense lead up to that, and incredible focus by all the players. You know, Dawn Staley, the coach of South Carolina, was on that team, along with Jennifer Azey. Ruthie Bolton was fantastic. Lisa, Katrina McLean is like just the most amazing player ever. Teresa Edwards, Carla McGee. I saw her actually last week. Venus Lacey came on as a late addition. Rebecca Lobo, Katie Stedding.
Crazy.
So it was just, they were just the names. Obviously Nikki McCray.
Cheryl Swoops.
Yeah, it's crazy all the names.
Cheryl was fantastic.
I actually went to one of your games at the Olympics. We were playing, of course, in the soccer component of it. But for some reason, we had this a bit, maybe it was the final even.
Well,
You
guys did play earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we had just finished and we were able to go actually enjoy a game live. And it was so awesome to see.
I
remember thinking, oh my gosh. And that Olympics is when, of course, women went off.
Right.
Yep. From basketball and our soccer team, gymnastics, softball. Yep. I mean, it was, they called
I think swimming had always been big in the Olympics and gymnastics. And I remember being at the Olympics. We were actually in the hotel. We didn't stay in the village. They had
basketball players get really fancy.
We're not
living.
In the village, right? Yeah. But we were right across from where they had the bombing. And that was just a, you know, horrible thing. And my mother was there. She came down and I remember watching like soccer on TV and I just said, wouldn't it be fun to kind of, you know, go to the Olympics? And she goes, Tara, you are at the Olympics. But I'm like, it wasn't fun. It was work.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, that was always our game we would play at the Olympics when we would sit and watch. You know, you're always just trying to get off your legs. So we would lay mm-hmm. horizontal and watch the Olympics. And we would say, okay, how can we keep this gig going forever and ever? And what would be our next sport? So I'm like, I could do kayaking maybe. Yeah. I could maybe go on to kayaking. I could go. So we'd try and figure out like, okay, how can we just change our sport and live the Olympic dream forever?
Right. I mean, I have had such incredible experiences, you know, whether it's, you know, meeting presidents, and you've done the same thing. When we were training with the Olympic team, we went to Washington, D.C., and we met with our Supreme Court justices, you know, it was Sandra Day, you know, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so the whole team, we're sitting in this like kind of room that looked like a baby courtroom, a little courtroom. And, you know, we're talking to the press and then she says to the press, all right, you're done, like that, you know. And then she goes, now we can talk. You know, you like you have to pinch yourself. You're like, you're sitting with the Supreme Court justices of the United States. And she, Sandra Day O'Connor was from Stanford. You know that.
Yeah,
and
right.
She turned to me and she said, Tara, I have a surprise. And I'm thinking, what the heck could that be? Right. And so she goes, come on. And so the whole team, we go up to the third floor and she goes, and there's a basketball court up there. And she goes, this is the highest court in the land. So we started playing and I'm like, Lisa Leslie with, you know, Justice Ginsburg is like, you know, 5'2" maybe.
No way.
But we had so much fun. It was you know, pictures of being there. It was so amazing. You know, we had a private meeting with President Clinton. Uh-huh. We went to the White House and, you know, the Secret Service guys had their earphones in and they're like, you know, he's coming down. And so we got in our van. He got in his big limo and we drive out to this place where we're going to go running.
You went for a jog with President Clinton?
Yeah.
That was like scheduled into the... I've never heard of that.
You're going to kick out of this one. This team has been training, right? And one of these White House, for lack of a better word, idiots says, what if one of the girls can't keep up with, you know, President Clinton? I said, I will cut them on the spot. You know, he's jogging along and they're jogging with him because, you don't want to go in front of him. And, you know, you're just like, so he would stop and he would kind of point out some things because he was resting, you know? And
then exactly.
We turn this corner and there's 300 press people sitting in a bleachers. And he starts sprinting. I turned to our team and go, let's go, y'all. You know, and I was running at that point, like about, I would run every other day, but you know, I was doing like my good 45 to an hour. And I turned on my little jets too. And we,
you're like, he is not going to outrun us right in front of the press.
Exactly. We also met, Patsy Mink.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Really the godmother of Title IX, Patsy Mink doesn't get enough credit for what she did for Title IX. Does she?
Nope.
You talk, Tara, a ton about the inspiration drawn from your players. And I know over, as we just said, 45 years of doing this, and there's got to be a lot of them. But tell us your favorite story of a time a player inspired you.
There are a lot of them. Can I tell three? Short one?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
of course.
My first one.
We're on your clock, sister.
Our first national championship we won in 1990, and we had a young lady on our team. Her name was Angela Taylor, and she walked on the team. And I asked each player to write down on a little index card, you know, what do you contribute to the team? What's your role on the team? And she wrote down, here's someone that never plays. She wrote down, spread sunshine.
Oh.
And, you know, that was really inspirational in that, and we won a national championship. And what was fun was then the next year, actually she got hurt, but then the year after that, she went in the game and I said, do you want to play anytime? And she goes, send me in the game anytime. You know, some people will take their shoes off if they don't want to go in the game, right?
Right.
But so she ended up going in and guarding Dawn Staley in the 1992 semifinal game with 0.7 seconds left. And we knew Dawn was going to get the ball. And so, you know, Angela's has been a great inspiration. And then a young lady that you know, Jennifer Azy, when we were with the Olympic team, we were in Ukraine and we had to leave at like 4 a.m. So we're loading the bus and, you know, everyone walks by. There were like probably, I don't know, 12 to 15 women, they had very thin jackets on. They were begging outside the hotel on the way to the bus. And everyone, you know, just walks right by them and gets on the bus, including me. And along comes Jennifer, who is just barely making the 3:30 time to load the bus. And she sees a woman. She takes stuff out of her pocket. She opens her suitcase and, you know, just starts giving her stuff. And everyone got off the bus and did the same thing, you know. And those women went away so happy. And it was such a lesson for me in, like, I think leadership and compassion, but also, you know, how one person can make a difference, you know.
Yeah. And what that inspired in the rest of the bus, getting off and doing the same.
A young lady at Stanford, Chris McMurdo, was a freshman. She was all everything from South Carolina. And she came out to Stanford and I picked her up and I'm driving her in Palm Drive. You can picture a beautiful sunny day, blue sky, the church, Mem Chu right there, and driving along the palm trees. And I turned to this freshman, incoming freshman, and said, What are you thinking about right now? You know, and I thought she might say, well, what's my roommate going to be like, or the food or practice or something. She paused and she looked at me and she said, Tara, I want to make a difference in this world. And I was like, damn, you know, she's gone on to go to medical school and she's a hospitalist in Nashville, Tennessee. And she's, you know, she came running up to my office during the summer of her junior year. And she said, I've been working in the emergency room. I saved someone's life today. I said, you have made a difference, you know?
Yeah. There you go.
Wow.
So I got about 100 of them.
I know.
Those,
I was just going to say.
Those are my top ones.
You must have so I many do. Like that, right?
I do.
That would make a great book.
I just think of all the incredible women that I have coached. And I watch them and I learn from them. And they're incredibly bright, you know? It's really special working at Stanford and coaching the women that I coach.
Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on Trailblazing Women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com. I think that's one of the things that I often think about with coaches. I mean, you guys are giving so much of yourselves, but you're also, I think, one of the gifts you get back is you are surrounded by these amazing women who you're able to mold, in a sense, and teach them these incredible life lessons. But they're also, you know, teaching you stuff and will be for the rest of your life. So the give and take of that. Okay, speaking of players, we reached out to a couple of your players to ask their favorite stories of you. So I'm going to play the first one. The first one is from the OG herself, Jen Azy. So stand by. Here is her question, the story she wants to hear from you. Tara, 1 second.
Hey, Tara, why don't you tell everyone the story about me missing my 2 mile run time by 1 second? And you made me come in every morning at 7 a.m. until I made my time. And oh, by the way, my 2 mile time was 12 minutes and 30 seconds, but I had to beat 12 minutes and 29 seconds. Anyway, please talk about your level of expectation and detail and how much you may have changed over the years.
Oh, Jennifer.
1 second.
Well, she was wearing headphones, so she couldn't hear what we were telling her in terms of that she needed to pick up the pace.
Stop
you know,
it.
That she was going to make it, you know, but she didn't like that. She didn't like it. She was mad. You know, I think that it's interesting that she remembers that because, you know, holding her accountable was a good thing for her. And, you know, yeah. a lot of times we don't like that when it happens, but we're thankful later. Yeah. And I think she's thankful. I think she's that kind of mom with her kids. You know, she has very yeah. high expectations, and here it's what you do. You either do it or you, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure she shared that story with her kids when they come in a second late. Yeah. Sorry, let me tell you about this day.
Yeah.
Why the attention to detail? 1 second. What's 1 second?
I mean, games can be won and lost in a second. Doing the right thing, kind of the saying, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything, you know. So do it right. Do, you know, here's the standard. And she made the time, you know. It wasn't like she couldn't do it. She just decided she wanted to wear her headset and didn't want to listen. So it's like, okay, you know, that was your choice. But yeah, she did. It was 1 second. And I had a new assistant at the time, Renee Brown. And Renee was the one that had to tell her, you're going to have to do it again.
Poor Renee.
All right. I will cue up the next former player. And I'm not even going to say the name. We'll just let it play.
All right.
Hi, Tara. It's NECA. Can you tell the story of Halloween circa 2008? I think it was my freshman year, but I'm sure that you'll remember exactly why I'm asking.
NECA Agumake.
All right. Well, on Halloween, I give out full candy bars because they're left over from camp. And I give out game tickets. So I get a lot of kids coming to my door. And one group came that were, they were bigger than the other little kids. And it was our team dressed up as different Taras. And NECA had taken my big red bathrobe from my locker and had a swim cap and goggles. And so she came as Tara the swimmer. And she cracked herself up about that. There were other ones too that were, you know, equally, but I think that was the one that I remember. But all the other ones were pretty funny too. But they had themselves a good old time doing that. And I laughed my head off too. It was pretty funny.
Wait, we're going to have to get some pictures and post those with this episode as well.
That was funny. It was pretty funny.
Those exist because you do a lot of swimming. Oh,
I do. And especially during the pandemic, you know, you're like, what are you going to do? And, you know, you go to the gym, you go home. You know, I didn't go anywhere. So I started swimming a lot. And have you had Katie Ledecky on your podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, I swam in the lane next to her.
Oh, you did?
In between her and Simone Manuel.
Oh, we've had both of them. Oh,
yeah, so I'm swimming along. We're in the 50-meter pool, and I barely get to the wall. You know, we get to the wall, and I turn around, and I look, and they're already at the other end.
We've got one more player requesting a story. Here we go.
Hello, hello to my favorite ladies. This is Chinee Ogumike, and I'm so glad to be a pseudo guest while you are interviewing my favorite person, Coach Tara Vanderveer, the Hall of Famer, the icon. And so here's my personal story. Obviously, I know I'm her favorite player ever, minus NECA, okay? But I want you to ask Coach Tara the craziest thing that happened that I did to her at practice when a recruit was there. And we had to do a drill where we were running around the four corners of the court and I was backpedaling. Sorry, Coach.
I know the story. We're doing a drill and somehow, well, Chinee was running backwards and somehow she totally ran into me and I mean, like clobbered me and I could feel tingling like all down my spine.
Oh.
And, I mean, I was like, I was knocked out. So I get up and she's like, are you okay? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm okay. I was not okay.
Oh.
I was just like, oh God, how am I going to get through this day? You know, but she felt so badly. But it wasn't her fault and it wasn't my fault, but we're both just standing right there. Right. I was standing and she was backpedaling. So whenever we do that drill, I make sure I get out of the way.
Yeah. Lesson learned. I love it. I love it. We asked them all to send their stories and they were like, yes, yes, yes. On it, on it, on it. I was like, oh,
that's cute.
Yeah. Very cute. All right. Is it time for the Lynn game, Lynn?
Yeah, I mean, story time was just unbelievable. Wow. We hit the nail on the head with it. You would have a few stories to tell, Coach.
I do have some stories. You're right.
Well, thank you for sharing all of those. And it is now time for some competition. Coach, you are about to go head-to-head with Julie, legendary Stanford Cardinal alum, in a game of trivia. There will be five questions, all multiple choice. And a key element of this is that you have to chime in for your answer. So if you could share what your chime will be when you know the answer.
I'm going to say go card.
Ooh,
go
card. I like it.
Okay, there you go.
I like it.
There you go. All right.
Jules, what do you have for us?
I'm gonna stick with the British phone booth shaker. Or would you want me to chime in as well with a voice?
Oh,
you
know now I kind of want a voice. Yeah, what are you going to say?
I'm going to give a woo woo.
Every game has a theme. This is a recurring one. It's a grab bag. So anything goes. Questions can be about absolutely anything. Are we ready?
Ready.
Ready. Woo woo.
Go card.
Question one. What animal has the highest blood pressure? Is it A? This is so ridiculous. A, a hedgehog. B, a giraffe. Or C, a panda.
All right, go card. I'm going to say the giraffe.
Correct.
Oh, come on. You Googled that, didn't you?
No, just figure it's that big. You know, better have high blood pressure to pump it around.
Yeah.
Question two.
It's good thinking.
What color are the goalposts in the NFL? Are they A, neon green, B, yellow, or C,
B, Julie? Yellow.
Correct.
Okay, 1-1.
Question three. Which planet is the hottest in the solar system? Is it A?
Go card, Venus.
Correct.
She's like, don't even give me options.
I was like, impressive.
I think it's Venus, but I'm not sure. It's been a long time.
Julie, that was impressive.
That was very impressive. It's good. She lives on a university. It's by osmosis.
My 5-year-old nephew told me that yesterday.
Oh, stop it. Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That is good timing right there. You thank him.
Question four. What element does the chemical symbol AU stand for? Julie.
Gold.
Correct.
Well, that's a good one.
Hey, I still remember it from my med days.
Wow.
Pre-med days.
Tied 2-2 into question five.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Oh, this is good.
What was the name of the first cloned animal, which was a sheep? Is it A, Bet, B, Dolly, or C, Mariah?
Go card. Dolly.
I'm giving this one to Coach Tara Vanderveer, Jules.
It was correct. So close.
Did you know Dolly too? Did you say Dolly too?
What would you have said, Julie?
I would have said Dolly.
Yeah.
All right, what were the options? I think I would have said Dolly. I was shaking in it. Was that
we'll play a tie.
Yeah. One more.
A tiebreaker is rock, paper, scissors.
You got it. Okay. Most pressing questions, Coach. Where does the nickname T-Dog come from?
That, I believe, was from one of our guards, Marta Snezek, who played back in, I'm going to say, must be 2015 or 16, right in there. You know, it's good to have that nickname because they can call coaches a lot of other things.
Yeah. T-Dog. I would have liked it. I don't know how they say it, but I say it like that. T-Dog.
Coach, my most pressing is, I know swimming is your jam. What do you like about swimming?
I like the workout, and I can be just totally, in my own head.
Okay, high, low, cheer. The high of your career, the low of your career, and the cheer is for someone who has helped you along the way, who you have gratitude for and wanted to thank.
I have so many highs. I don't even know where I would begin. I mean, just the letters I've gotten from players, the just the you know, relationships that I have with the people I've worked with. I think Olympia Scott was a player I had that, you know, called me like 1 hour after she had her first child. You know, like,
right.
That was a real high. I mean, winning a gold medal, winning a national championship, all kinds of things like that. I think a low was one time when we had a really good team and we had a big lead in the game. We were in the final four and we lost the lead and lost the game. It was in, I'm trying to, what year would that have been? 1997, I think. And we were like a top ranked team with great, great players. And it was devastating to not win that game. And, you know, I really owe a ton of gratitude to Amy Tucker, who was my associate head coach. And she's an outstanding person and also just a fabulous evaluator of talent. So she saw players, you know, she would be funny. I would say, well, what about her, recruit her? She goes, we will recruit her over my dead body. And, but she would just say, look at this one over there. And she was right. So she's just not only a great coach, but a great person.
Yeah. Aw, yay. Awesome. Well, I will say, my goodness, to be able to watch your career and see what you've done in these 45 years, and for you to reach that milestone, which I thought was so fitting after how much you've given to this game of becoming the winningest coach ever in the men's or women's game in collegiate basketball, was fantastic to watch because
well, thank you.
You deserve all of that and more, my friend. And I wish you all the best as you go into the big dance coming
thank
up.
Thank you. Thank you. We're excited. We're, you know, we're a little disappointed because we didn't play very well yesterday, but as Chene's dad and NECA's dad would say, every disappointment is a blessing. So
right.
We got to turn it around and make it a good thing for us.
Right on, right on.
All right, nice to meet you, Lynn. Great to see you, Joy.
Yeah, and such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me as your guest.
Thanks, Coach, for doing this right, in the middle
take
of it
care.
All.
Thank you.
Thank Good you. Luck. Congrats.
Good luck in the tourney.
Let's go, Card. Go, Card. Let's go. Good luck in the tournament is right. Okay, takeaways. I'm going to go first, Lynn.
Okay.
I was thinking after she signed off, one, the fact that, as I said in the open, that she would do that interview with us in the middle of all this craziness, I greatly appreciate. But two, like her attention to detail during the course of her career, the standard that she set. I mean, when Jen told the story of 1 second late, she's like, yeah, she wasn't listening. She had her headphones on. You got to get it done. I mean, the dedication and what it must take to put in 45 years at the collegiate level, 45 years, and to be not just great, but consistently great and winning every single year. And now you add in NIL, transfer portal. I'm not sure how many more coaches are going to be willing to put in 4+ decades in this current climate. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's perseverance right there.
Yeah. And at the same school.
That's something.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Turns out my takeaway is the 1 second story.
Mm.
And I so want to unpack that with Dr. Colleen Hacker. As far as the commitment, attention to detail, holding someone accountable to a standard. The other aspect of that story with Jennifer Easy is that I did the math after the fact that she was running a 6:15 mile.
Yeah, as a basketball player.
Exactly.
These aren't soccer players.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Well, the follow that we didn't ask is she was running tight on time. So there's a couple things we didn't get to honor her time because of all the craziness around her. That I wanted to ask, I should have, is AZ in her question to her said, talk about how those standards have evolved. And I'm guessing like that you have that standard, which you need, and you have that detail, but you also realize like, okay, there's the other side of that I'm going to have to bring into my coaching so that I don't wear myself out with mm-hmm. these players
mm-hmm.
with 4 years of that. And I'm guessing that's what it was. And so we'll find out.
Okay.
I'm going to ask AZ what that was. But yeah, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. One other thing stuck out to me was when Tara was talking about how the Olympics for her weren't fun. They were work. And I just couldn't help but think of the Sydney Olympic story and your family and how all they did was party.
Yeah. Oh, God. I do think I said at one point, had I known the friends and family setup was so good, I think we might have lost earlier. We should have just lost. Throw in the Olympics to have a glass of champagne. No, mm-hmm. I'm kidding.
But. Sydney Harbor.
Yeah, on the Sydney Harbor.
Yeah. So, questions permitted. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm so glad this is in a Stanford episode because this is about as intellectual as you can get. Let's go.
Dear, oh, God.
Yeah. Wait for it. Dear Lynn and Julie, I'm having a debate with my colleagues on what is considered the front and back of the envelope. Half say that the side of the flap is the front, whereas the other half says the side where you write your name is the front. What do you all think? Sincerely, Marcella.
Deep thoughts. I absolutely think the front where you write your address and name is the front. Hence, I called it the front. Right. And where you open it is the back because you flip it over. Like, you don't put the envelope back up, like flap up in your mailbox because you put the stamp on the front, which is where you write. So that one is not as intellectually taxing as some others.
Does a straw have one hole or two? That's what this one reminded me of. I'm with you. Front of the envelope, where you write all the stuff. Back the envelope, where you close the flap. If anyone thinks differently, hit us up. Let us know your point of view.
Yeah, I want to know.
Yeah.
I'm interested how that's a debate even. Maybe too much time around the water cooler. I don't know.
But isn't this how you build camaraderie? You have to talk about these things in life.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks, Marcella.
Thank you, Marcella. And you too can email laughterpermitted@gmail.com. Get in on the fun. All right, Dope Village, shall we do this again next week? Until then, because we will be back next week, we are sending a lot of good vibes your way. And if you love this podcast, we would greatly appreciate you telling your friends about it, your neighbors about it, strangers, making sure you rate us, leave us a message, and we want you to know it makes a world of difference. And we're sending out a gigantic thank you to our sponsor, Ally, for their continued support, and to Kate Diaz, as always, for her theme music. All right, kids, as always, remember, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
One person can make a difference.